the Sheikh and I will be talking to Fadami Tajiniai, a senior engineering manager, about balancing technical excellence with meeting business objectives, continuous learning, and adapting communication styles.
So can you take us through your professional journey leading up to where you are today?
Yeah, well, first of all, being a person born and raised in Iran, and I have studied there and I worked there, then I had this feeling that I want to experience the other markets and also the international working experience. So I went to Malaysia and worked there as a developer for a while, then moved to Germany and here. And in between, I had some, startup adventure. And it was quite...
Such a great phrase, startup adventure.
Yeah, exactly. Because they are adventures, you know, that you don't know about the results. You have to put all your efforts in and see what would be the result. So it was a very promising experience for me because it opened my eyes about how shall you, you know, design your product? How could you be a good or a bad marketer for your product? How the quality matters or doesn't matter based on the timing of your product and so on. So after that experience, I came to Germany and I have found a job as a senior developer in my first company. And the company was working in different areas like e-commerce, payment industry, and so on, and also a project about AI. And during the time, I was part of each of these projects. Then after a while, I found out that I am being the person who everybody is approaching to know about the status of the projects, to know about the challenges, about the risks and this kind of stuff. So I felt, okay, maybe this is giving me a signal that I have to think about some leadership roles or managerial roles. And also when I asked some recruiters for the next step or for the next role, they were telling me that maybe it's time for you. And you have to select if you want to go, you know, that's a Y shape, right? Either you go as a principal developer or you change your path to managerial levels. So in the beginning, being a developer and, you know, working as a developer makes you more introverted. So in the beginning, it was a bit frightening for me because, okay, this is a huge change. You have to change your daily routines and so on. Now you have to be a people person in development. You don't need that experience or that expertise so much, right? So it was a bit challenging, but then I made my mind. I, you know, based on all those experiences that I have gathered in the past and based on the fact that I was the person who is the main contact when it comes to status of the project, I decided, okay, I can be a manager. So I started my role as engineering manager a long time ago in multiple companies. And we had different projects like in payment industry, we had very huge customers that were on board in one application. And I have experienced a lot of challenges because you are supposed to add more features to the existing application with so many customers on board. At the same time, you want to optimize the existing services. And also technical challenges that we always face, like these tech debts, and they are hindering us from going. Yeah, exactly. They are hindering you from going further. And at the same time, because of the budget limitation and new development, you don't have enough time to take care of all of them. So I learned a lot about how to balance this stuff, how to, you know, optimize the way of implementation, how to prioritize which should go first. And Yeah, of course. As a people manager, I learned a lot how to overcome different situations when it comes to people's conflicts and so many other stuff. Then I felt that, okay, now I am experiencing a lot during the work hours, but maybe reading some books would help me. So now I am following a lot of leadership channels and books because I see that there are so many cases in work that you could find them, not all of them, but you could find them in books too. So I say by leveraging, you know, going through some books and learning from the experience of others and combining it to the everyday work, I could make my path through leadership because I had no official training for that. And now I feel that, coming all these journey, I can step up for another position in leadership too.
Nice. Along the way, was there anybody who helped you with the transitioning? HR, your supervisor or leader?
Yeah.
Or it was just you and...
No, definitely. There are some people who always play a very important or pivotal role in your career development, right? I was lucky that everybody that I have worked with, well, maybe everybody is too much, but most of the people that I worked for or worked with, they were super nice and super helpful. If there was situations that they could help, they would step in. And also in the first role as manager, my supervisor who somehow, walked me through this role step by step as a mentor, he played a very pivotal role for my, transition, I would say.
Okay. And speaking of books, any recommendations? Any books that you found super interesting recently?
Yeah, not recently, but I always find this book very interesting because it always can open up your way of thinking and your way of viewing at the current situation. The book, if I remember correctly, is like Five Dysfunction of
the Team.
Of the Team. Yeah, exactly. And for a manager, I would say that is essential because especially when you take over a team that you are not familiar with, so you just came in to the company or you are taking over from a different department, then you have to know how is the status of your current team. So I think based on the items that this book recommends, where to investigate first, it can be a good start for every manager. Just a book that it's very similar to that Five Dysfunction of a Team, but this is Five Dysfunction of an Organization, I would say. I really liked it. You know, when you go through the first page, it's like, okay, somebody in the military has wrote this book, so I'm
your leadership around, maybe?
No, Five Dysfunctions of an Organization should be what is... Because this is Patrick Lencioni, Five Dysfunction of the Team, but Five Dysfunction of an Organization. I have actually the paper book at home. And the book is written by a person who was in military for quite a while. And then he moved to
business.
Yeah, to the business. And he was one of the very successful business owners in America. And when you go to the go through the first page, it's like, okay, shall I get advice from a military person? But when it comes to, you know, to the next chapters, and you see that how important is a mission and a vision and all of these stuff in the military, and how, you know, the life of the people is dependent on these stuff, and then you bring it to the business and see, okay, that can be also a role model here. I really like the book, so I can recommend reading that book to new managers.
Sounds great. I think there's a lot of things when it comes to leadership and managing
that go beyond the ID. I mean, it's quite obvious when you say it out loud, but I also love this book by this L. David Marquette. You know this one? He's also ex-military. He was a captain or commander of a submarine. And he, surprisingly, tells the story of empowering people in the military.
Yeah.
Which you would normally would assume that there's a chain of command and there's like the decisions only go the one way. And he actually says that actually in the successful team is not the case, even if it's military. So I, interesting.
Yeah, that's very interesting because I myself had this vision of military teams that there is always one way of command and nobody has a say in that and so on. But, you know, things like vision, mission, and values are super important there. And here in the business, if we don't, you know, go for the best, we lose some money in the market, right? But if they don't do the best... people lose lives. And then over there, you understand how important it is to negotiate and to, you know, buy in and to plan for each mission. You know, you cannot just go to bring people in the military field and say, this is the mission, right? Go do it. You have to communicate that first and bring people to the point that they are ready for that. So I really like the book. Let me check if I can find it.
Next season for the podcast, I want to speak with military guys, with policemen, and maybe sports coaches.
Yeah.
Those are interesting.
Yeah.
Different perspective.
And maybe there are some, I'm sure there are some lessons to be learned.
Yeah. Five Dysfunctions of a Company, Leonard Mattson. Yeah, this is... this is the book, Five Dysfunctions of a Company by Leonard Mattson.
Okay.
Mattson, yeah.
Different guy.
Yeah.
Similar title, different context.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like it's people often saying that introducing OKRs will fix everything, but usually it it turns out that it doesn't fix everything, and it comes down to actually the dysfunctions of that organization. So
yeah,
gonna for sure give it a thought.
Yeah, great.
We're working with a really highly dysfunctional teams that eventually form into highly
performing teams.
Yeah, that happens. Actually, they hire managers whenever there is a some kind of fire that needs to be seized, right? So I would say, yeah, during the time I have stepped in some teams that were, I wouldn't say they were dysfunction, but maybe they were, I don't know, half functioning or not utilizing all the capacity. So I stepped in, and after a while of you know, getting my insights, then I realized, okay, now I need to apply these changes, and those changes were successful, and after a while, the team was some kind of overachieving, or the people who were dissatisfied in the past, they were super happy with the current situation. Yeah.
What were the most valuable skills that you had to learn when transitioning from an engineer to an engineering manager or leader?
Yeah, as I said in that book, you know that where to investigate, right? But the book doesn't tell you how to investigate, right? How to find out the answers to your questions. So one of the main important skills is that people skills, that you can build a trust between yourself and those team members or all the stakeholders that you are going to work with, right? And based on that trust, that gives you the opportunity to find out about the real problem underneath. Because otherwise, people will not open up to you.
It's the bottom layer of the pyramid of the spongebob, right?
Yeah, exactly. To make the trust. Yeah, exactly. And then, well, after finding out about the the situation or the problem, then you have to apply some changes. You have to have your strategies. So are you gonna apply those strategies by yourself? No, it's not possible, because you have to have the people vote in that strategy. So this is still another aspect of people management or people skills, because you are bringing in other people to your strategy, and you want them to, first of all, agree with whatever change you want to apply, and then continue with you. So,
the buy-in.
Yeah, exactly, the buy-in.
What about the fear of conflict? That's a big one, right?
Yeah, fear of conflict. Well, I don't have fear of conflict, because I believe if there's a conflict, we have to identify that and we have to resolve that. But I have seen that some people take it, you know, mistakenly. It's like, if you are not feared of conflict, that means you can say whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not true. You don't want to hurt people's feelings. You don't want to, I don't know, to judge people's personal stuff. Yes. So fear of conflicts.
It's not about being a jerk, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you are not afraid of conflicts, because you are able of identifying them and resolving them, but it doesn't mean that you are creating a conflict, right? So you are always trying to put your words in the correct way that it doesn't create the conflict, but rather solves the situation and solves the problems that you're facing. So I think this is also important, that after building that kind of trust base environment that you are trying to build, you also give the people this feeling that even if there is a conflict, there is no big deal, and we want to come to an agreement or to a situation that we can all focus on the solution rather than the problem. Or rather than pointing out fingers on each other about, you know, who is the cause and these kind of stuff.
Has it this experience and this skill set and this knowledge changed your approach to recruiting or recruitment? I mean, I can say from my own perspective that it changed. I mean, as the longer I deal with issues like this, the more differently I look at the recruitment process and or the characteristics of the people that I hire.
No.
That I recruit, it's. I think I was very naive in the very early days. So
yeah.
My whole point here is that these learning affect
how you look at new people.
Yeah, exactly. There is always a say that we want to be inclusive, right? So we want to be inclusive on one side, and on the other side, we want to have a team or a set of co-workers that they are mostly consistent with each other. So these two things are not that much aligned, right? So you have to find a balance. Okay, how can I be inclusive, bring in fresh breeze and people with different ideas, with different way of thinking, and then at the same time have this consistent team. So how can this work? How can this balance? And I have seen during my work experiences that some managers, they really don't do that balance. It's like they are only hiring people that are similar to the existing ones. Yeah. Or have the same skill set as themselves, as the manager or the co-workers that they are working with. So this simply, after a while, leads to a team of very similar people with so much in agreement that they don't really challenge the status quo. Mm-hmm. That means you are not improving in the future. But by being inclusive, by bringing in different, first of all, inclusivity can have so much different meaning, right? So It's like people of color, people from different ethnicities and so on. And then also about the skill sets, you bring people with different skill sets because they can give you the new ideas for your product. And it's not just developing something that is good. It's developing something that is good enough to win the more market share for you. So I would say, yes, of course, after experiencing different ways of management and also going through so many books in managerial and leadership, I have changed my way of thinking about recruitment. And now I onboard people that first of all can cover the skill sets that are missing in the existing team, and also they can be from different ethnicities and so on. But I would say this is not easy to manage, because sometimes you want to be inclusive, but you really don't have enough people in the existing group that they can do the interviews with these people. Sometimes you are like, okay, you are rejecting a candidate because you really didn't understand what they said. Yeah, and that was a challenge for me in one company that I was facing, that the current developers, they didn't understand the seniority of the candidate, and they just rejected them. So I have to develop some, some ways like, go through their CV to know which universities they went, which projects they have been actively part of, and how successful those projects were. So in a nutshell, I would say hiring process is very essential to building up your team, but it's not easy. So you have to always put in some efforts there. Yeah.
So many people don't understand the diversity or think of it as it comes down to, race, sex, and or origin or something like that.
Hmm.
But it's much more than that. Actually, these are vanity metrics. I think it comes down to different things. And my question here is, how rigorous are you about that in terms of how you actually deal with it? There are many ways to deal with it. People do some sort of matrix of their teams in terms of the dimension they're interested in, like people-oriented versus objective-oriented relationships. Like, there are so many ways to deal with it. Others, like, take a more loose approach and deal with it on a more ad hoc basis. So basically they have a team, but they have a candidate, and they're trying to figure out if there's a match in an ongoing way rather than making it another scientific project. And I want to ask how you deal with that.
Yeah, I think it depends to the amount of time that you have, right? Sometimes you don't have enough time, so you will ask some external recruiter to do the first layer of screening. Mm-hmm. So in one company, we had that system that we simply couldn't dedicate a lot of time in that area. So they have done the first layer of the screening for us based on the CV screening. And then afterwards, we had our developers to start interviews. But even internally, we had these first layer screening based on the fact that a hiring manager first goes to the interview process to know if this person is really, first of all, covering any gap in the team. It was super important for me that this person is bringing extra knowledge and extra expertise. And then this person is fit for that role that we are hiring for. So we had this kind of, as you said, a matrix that is, there should be a match between the capabilities of this person and also our requirements. And then after seeing that, okay, it's to some extent fit to the role, then the main interview process starts.
Cool. And I think we're in a times of financial uncertainty, with higher interest rates, with a little bit more uncertainty when it comes to financing. And there's a lot of talk about being cost-effective and oriented towards delivering products and meeting business objectives rather than building the things that are technically excellence. And I want to ask you about how do you approach the need for technical excellence with the need to deliver products in a timely manner, and whether it has changed over the last couple of quarters or years.
Yeah, of course, to be realistic about the current status of the market in IT, we would say that there's no abundance of money there anymore, right? So it's like, because of this challenge, every organization or company, they have to optimize their way of development. They have to optimize their costs and so on. So when it comes to optimization, then you have to prioritize, as you said, technical excellency. Yes. What is the value of being so much excellent in technical perspective if you are not getting the market share, if you are not selling enough, if you are not bringing in more value at the end? So it means you have to compromise some of the excellencies here because you are developing with fewer developers, even maybe fewer managers and other roles, right? So the people are less in the organization, but you have to still continue working. So it comes to prioritization and to, first of all, know about the market and business that you are in. So I would say there are different priorities in different industries. If you are in payment industry, then there are some must-haves and such as fraud detection. You cannot skip fraud. Yeah. Fraud detection or compliance in your payment industry, because you simply will you lose your license. And if you lose your license, you are not in the market anymore. Yeah. So there are some must-haves that you have to implement and you have to take care of, but the extras are extras, and then you can prioritize about the extras. So when you know about your industry, you know your must-haves and you know the other stuff that you can play with when it comes to prioritization. Then it comes, okay, now I know about my industry. So how am I going to implement this feature or product that I already prioritized? So this is prioritized. This is going to be the next 3 months job. But are we going for full excellency? Are we going to put out some software or application that is working like, end of technology? Or can we compromise a little bit about the quality and this kind of stuff? Even for test cases, well, I am pro test cases because I believe that if the developer is implementing test case, then the way of development is different from not implementing that. And also it decreases a lot of hassles when it comes to maintenance and so on. But even for test cases, you can, based on your industry and also based on the current budget that you are dealing with, you can go a bit higher or lower. Mm-hmm. So the quality of the code, the test cases, and all these can be managed by you and your team based on the current situation.
It seems easy when you
No, it's not easy because there is no written standard for it, yes. Right?
Optimization is good. Generally, there are trade-offs.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is that we are working with developers, and developers always intend to go for end of technology, you know. They want to have their hands dirty in the new things in the market. It is very good. And sometimes they help with your business, but sometimes they are really not the priority for the moment to keep the business up and running. So this is another challenge that you have to face. Okay, are you allowing the developers to go with the latest technology, or no, maybe it's not the time for you? You know, kind of decision making that you have to go through.
Kind of final leadership questions. What would be one piece of actionable advice we would offer someone stepping up
to the technology leadership role in the first time, probably.
Yeah. I guess that this person is coming from a technical background, so they already have gathered a lot of experiences in technical perspective. But when it comes to leadership, it's all about people and people management. And those people are either your team members or your superiors and stakeholders. So I would say go through some books when it comes to leadership and people management, and also at the same time go to some new kind of events, because you have been very technical person and so much introverted. Now you need to be extroverted. You need to be able to present yourself. To
conferences, things of that sort.
Yeah, events, conferences are big events, but even for meetups or something different, you know, even go to a pottery class, whatever, that gives you a different feeling of your life, you know, something new that gives you a different feeling and gives you this opportunity to come across people, talk to them, and share some experiences. If you don't, and it is even, you know, advised to go to somewhere that you have no expertise in that. Because then here you learn, okay, somewhere with no expertise, I am doing something valuable, right? This is my first pottery class, but I am doing something valuable. It gives you this feeling that even in leadership, since you are completely new, but you can add some values here and you can build your own path.
I love it. Pottery class. Nice.
That's just the nearest example that I, you know, could give you. But it's about being different from the past and going to different events.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure talking with you. Great, very valuable advice. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Better tech leadership powered by BrainHub. Follow Leszek on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Better Tech Leadership newsletter.